Well, it's my pleasure today to have Bonnie Matthews in the studio for an interview about something that I've been wondering about for a long time. You are a writer, and you write a particular genre, in a particular genre.
Right.
Describe that.
It's prehistoric fiction. I won't say historic because there are no records.
Right.
This goes way back in time.
Okay. And I guess I'm familiar with historic fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand that, basically someone takes a series of events and describes it. And I think there's a range that one could expect if you're reading historical fiction from something that is hewing very closely to the history as we know it.
Right.
Versus something that takes off from that point and might even go so far as doing alternate history.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about prehistoric history, how do you prepare to do anything like that?
What I did is to research. And the research was based on my question, and that was, who were the first Alaskans? Because what we're taught tells us that the first Alaskans are the first Americans. And when you begin to research, it doesn't take very long before you find out that may not be the case at all.
Oh.
Yes. And so that really piqued my curiosity. And 5 years later, I had been digging this hole to find out the answer to my question, and the hole doesn't have a bottom. And I thought, well, now that I have all this information, what do I do with it? And nonfiction had already been done by the experts who are credentialed, and I'm not. So I'm thinking, all right, what do I do with it? And then it dawned on me I could write fiction. And I thought, fiction? I've never written fiction in my life. And so I did teach English, however, so I thought, well, I know a little bit of something about fiction.
Okay.
So I went to the internet and looked, and there's a prehistoric novel here and a prehistoric novel there about the peopling of the Americas, but no systematic series.
Okay.
And I thought, hoo-hoo, I have found my niche.
All right. Now, when was this? When did you find that, moment?
I moved to Alaska in 2005.
Okay.
And it wasn't long after that I began to wonder, you know, I'd heard about the Bering Land Bridge and all this, and I thought, okay, let me get to the bottom of this because I want to know my environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what kicked it off.
So, and you mentioned that you had been a teacher of English.
Yes.
Had you done any previous writing as such?
In 88, I was poisoned.
Wow.
And the writing that I did, I produced two books that were published by Macfarland, and I wrote them because I didn't want what happened to me to happen to anyone else.
Okay.
So if I could eliminate or reduce the risk of the same thing happening to other people, that's what prompted me to do what I did.
Okay. So you had some experience putting a book together. And so,
uh-huh.
Okay. But that was not fiction. That was nonfiction.
That was nonfiction, and I got a totally erroneous idea of what it is to write and be published because with Macfarland, when I got the idea together, I sent a tip sheet to 10 publishers that I found in Writer's Market, and one of those wanted the books, and that was Macfarland. And that's like, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it did.
It did. Right. Okay. Very interesting. So you were then very successful in finding a publisher with that earlier effort.
Yes. I mean, I just took it for granted that you send out a tip sheet with 10 names and you get one. Yeah, right.
Sure. Okay. So we'll fast forward, and you're now you've done some research. You've come up with the idea. Did you work with other people in terms of researching, or was this your effort?
What I did is I took some courses at Matsu College. And I wanted to learn how to sew skins because that would help with my fiction. And that also gave me the privilege of using the library periodicals from my house.
Oh, okay. Important.
Yeah. So that was the key to getting to the periodicals.
Right.
And so I'm a researcher, and this is in the full sense of research. I go to something like the Quaternary Review.
Right.
And I start at volume one and go down the table of contents. If something is interesting, I read it. If it's not, I pass it by. And then I go to volume two. And then I go to volume three. And I read everything that they've got in that journal. Then I go to the next one. And that is the way that I researched for 5 years.
Okay. All right. So now you have a good background in, and what was the focus, the period focus or the materials that you were looking at?
What I was actually looking at is, in part, early man. And I have an event where I began the stories, and that is the eruption of Mount Toba, which occurred approximately 75,000 years ago. It was, you know, some people will say it's earlier than that, some later, and nobody right. really knows. But 75,000 is a nice, easy number.
Sure.
So.
And where is Mount Toba located?
Mount Toba is located in Southeast Asia, but is not connected to the continent.
Okay.
It's on the islands.
Okay.
And I had, in there, I focused on Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon and Homo erectus all meeting in the same area, which is southern China, in that area.
Okay.
Maybe south of southern China. What is southern China today? And what I had discovered in my research is that Neanderthals were not ignorant or dumb brutes that couldn't speak. They were really bright. And I wanted to be able to demonstrate that.
Okay.
And so there are many, many threads that are weaving through what I did. But I wanted to show something that was possible.
Okay.
Whether it happened or not, I don't know. But you can find out what animals were in the environment at that date, what plants were in the environment. It's amazing what you can find out.
Sure. So you built a one possibility
yes,
situation.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Describe that. What do you describe in the book in sum?
I look at Neanderthals primarily as the people. And I have them as a very peaceful people, although they kill one person in the first story because he's out of line. But the Neanderthals apparently did not have a gene for aggression. They also didn't have the luxury of infighting because they're small groups in a hostile environment. They have to get along.
Okay.
So I have them working together. And also, at the same time, I'm fascinated with the concept of birds flying where they don't bump into each other and knock each other to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of community working together without having to be told everything to do is what I wanted to show. Because, again, they don't have time to tell everybody what to do.
Sure.
And so that's where I began. And then I thought, okay, here comes Cro-Magnon. Let's have them interact. And I created that scenario. And they didn't really get along very well. A few of them did, and a few of them joined the people. They moved north and began living in a cave in southern China.
Okay.
And I was able to deal with some environmental issues. Like there's a lake near their cave, and I could show the fish that are endemic to that lake, which these people caught. I can also let people know through my blog what is the condition of those fish today.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm doing this, and it's very unnatural because you can't speak the way that we normally speak. We refer to technological things all the time. We refer to time in a different way than they would have. We have idioms, and you have to learn to write by getting rid of all of that. I went to my editor, and she said, Bonnie, you've got in here. It was so quiet, you could hear a pin drop. Well, I just cracked up, and she was dying laughing because they didn't have
pins. They didn't have pins, right.
And in a dirt floor in a cave.
Was not going.
No. She said, how about flea hop? I said, no, because people will remember that and forget what they were reading.
Okay.
So we'll use mouse squeak.
Okay. All right. That works.
So, I mean, it's those are the fun kind of things that have gone through this, and it's a huge learning process for me because it's writing like I've never written before in my life.
Now, I mentioned a book, but actually there's a series.
It is a series.
Tell us about that.
Well, the first book is what I was talking about, is you get to know the people. The story of the first book is a coming-of-age story for a young girl who is visited with the knowledge of the stories. Her memory holds everything together, word for word.
Okay.
And she loses her childhood because of that and is not happy about it at all. I wouldn't be either.
Sure.
So it tells her story, and the title of the book is Kiti's Story, 75,000 B.C., and Kiti is the young girl. Then the second book, she's grown, and their group is having to move. They're not running away from a volcano at this point. What they're running from is earthquakes, and the area that they were in is earthquake-prone. So they move north to get away from the earthquakes and the ash that fell from the
sure.
volcano. And they settle in a cave system. There's a walkway, and there are caves that go off of that walkway. Her brother, Manak Nah, in book two, and that book two is named Manak Nah's Story, has always wanted to have an adventure. But he did what he was supposed to do. He married, he raised his children, and now they're all grown, and he has an opportunity to take a fantastic adventure by boat from China-Mongolia area to Mexico and back.
Whoa, okay.
Because the Homo erectus adventurers make this trip routinely because they have people living over there.
Okay.
So that was fun because I had to figure out how do I make a boat. And I couldn't find any evidence of reeds. So I thought, well, what do they have in terms of building materials? And they have bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
So they go on a bamboo boat. And I had to contact a shipwright and say, okay, I don't know anything about boats, but will you tell me if my boat is possible? Is it seaworthy?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a long pause. And then finally he came back and said, I don't know why it wouldn't be just fine. It should be just absolutely fine. And I'm going, whoa, this is good. Now I can keep writing. But he sees people in the Americas. It's not frequent. And he doesn't necessarily see the people, but he will see smoke rising from a fire.
Sure.
And they do meet people while they're over there that are people that have been left off from the sailors. And then they come back. And the issue there is commitment. And his wife feels deserted and he has asked him to make no more than one trip. And does he make one, you know, does he turn into an adventurer? That you have to figure out. And then the third book is an actual migration of the people from China, Mongolia, but it's not all of them, it's just a portion, to Central America. And there they have huge environmental change. They go from four seasons with really cold winters to endless hot summer.
Oh, okay.
And the animals there are really weird because South America used to be an island. So the fauna there developed like it did in Australia or Madagascar differently. So they are not accustomed to the animals there, even the ones that might appear to be normal to them.
Okay.
And so the first night they're there, when the bugs and the frogs and all these animals get very quiet, they don't realize that that's a danger signal. They think that the animals are respecting their wise one who's talking. And so one of their members is abducted. And the story of book three is an abduction of one of their people and the quest to find her.
When did you complete these books?
I completed the first one in 2012, the second one in 2013, and Zamamolo's story, which is book three, is just out.
Okay. And I'm the obvious question is I'm thinking of two groups of people responding. One, people who are reading it as an interesting piece of fiction, mm-hmm. Telling a possible story, and then perhaps another group that might be called more critical in terms of assessing whether this is likely or not to be somewhat accurate. So what kind of reactions have you had?
Interesting. Okay. As far as my readers are concerned, I've had an archaeologist read it that I didn't know, who just absolutely loves it. He said, I don't agree with everything you've got in here, but I love what you've done with it. And he keeps asking, when's the next book coming out? I would expect that most people in the archaeology, anthropology world will tear out their hair over my books because the U.S. and Australia are the only countries in the world that believe that no humans were in the Americas prior to 11,700 years ago.
Okay.
And when I heard that, my response was, you got to be kidding. But, you know, I'm not educated in that field. So as I began to research, I realized that the U.S. and Australia are in the minority, and I don't know why. I really don't know why. But, I mean, there's been a piece of human skull found underneath a volcanic debris in Mexico that dated to 250,000 years ago. What do you do with that? There are over 400 so-called pre-Clovis, that's that 11,700 years ago thing. That's called the Clovis Barrier. There are over 400 pre-Clovis sites in the Americas. And the academic powers that be say, well, those things that you're calling tools are just broken rocks. Mm-hmm. So it's an argument that goes back and forth. I chose to speculate on pre-Clovis.
Okay.
Because it's fun.
Okay. In your research, did you happen to come across a guy that, and I mention this because some years ago I was attending a kayak symposium, mm-hmm. and the keynote speaker was someone who had chosen to take a kayak or essentially sail from Japan up the coast of the Russian Far East.
Oh, neat.
And across the Aleutians and so on to show that it could be done.
Yes.
Because there was, and I remember clearly in his discussion that many people had said no, would not happen. But he was demonstrating one that could be done and also that this would then have resulted in a whole series of settlements along the way or locations mm-hmm. along the way and then down, of course, the western coast of the present United States.
Right.
A fascinating adventure that he had. He had done other things like, kayak on the Cape of Good, down in the south of South America, a variety of other places. And he wanted something that was a little more adventurous, so he tried this out, and it was very successful. So I'm wondering if you've came across any of those kinds of pieces of information that where other people have explored this idea of communication and travel between the Far East mm-hmm. and the Americas.
It depends, again, on whether you're Clovis first or pre-Clovis.
Okay.
One of the things, I mean, if you look at the boat that I had my people construct, mm-hmm. it's made out of bamboo, and it's tied with vines and leather.
Okay.
75,000 years ago, I don't think those things would last. And that's the stock comment against what the guy that you were talking about did. We haven't found any boats.
Okay.
Sure. Going, how do you expect to find boats? They didn't make them out of metal. Human nature is looking at what's on the other side of the mountain, what's across the water. It's just normal human behavior to me and to many of the researchers I followed. Okay. I don't have to have something that shows me for definite that they were there, because the maxim is lack of evidence does not mean evidence of lack.
Sure.
So if you have a reason, and again, I can't figure out what the reason is, to hang on to no one was here prior to 11,700 years ago, you can say over and over again, where are the boats? Show me the boats. Mm-hmm. It's pointless, because it's an argument that nobody can win.
Okay. You mentioned you had that first experience with a couple of books, success. How is it that these three books are now in print? How did that happen?
I did my what I had learned, and that was I sent out 10 queries and came back with nothing. And I thought, whoa. So I tried it again, nothing. And after beating my head against the wall for a while, I thought, this is not fun.
Okay.
And so then I remembered I had gone to an Alaska Writers Guild meeting, and I had heard about Evan Swenson at Publication Consultants. And I thought, whoa, I have dealt with a publisher who lives way, way far away. Mm-hmm. It would be really neat if I could find one in my area.
Right.
So I sent the book to Evan, and I got a phone call instead of a email or a letter or whatever. And he said, you ruined my day. And I said, excuse me. That's definitely in what I expected to hear. And he said, normally I don't take things out of order. And normally I don't spend a long time reading something. And I couldn't put it down. And I'm going, whoa, this is wonderful.
Okay.
And so he wanted the book. So that's how it came to be. And I was not willing to go any route except royalties. Because to me, if a publisher was willing to go royalties, then that meant that from that person's judgment, the book had a fighting chance.
Okay. So tell us the titles of the three books again.
Okay. The first one is Kiti's Story, 75,000 B.C. The second one is Manak Naz's Story, 75,000 B.C., which wasn't supposed to exist, but people said, you have to write it because I have to know how Kiti's life ends. Not her story, but she does end her life in there. And then the third one is Zamimolo's Story, 50,000 B.C.
What plans now? Additional books?
Yes. Oh, yes. The fourth book, the way I work is I write them in my head while I'm doing book signings and events, and there's a lull. And then when the snow flies, I write. And this one I'm having a little bit of difficulty with, because this one is 35,000 B.C., and they're coming to Alaska.
Okay.
And that's like home turf. You've got to be really careful. So I'm trying to be very, very, very careful with this one. So it's slowing me down some.
Well.
But it's coming. And I figure, you know, as long as I live, I can keep doing this. I'm a workaholic. I got to have something to do, and this definitely keeps me out of trouble.
Okay. Well, I've been interviewing Bonnie Matthews about a very interesting set of three books and a fourth upcoming, dealing with his fictional prehistory or historical, which
is really prehistoric fiction.
Prehistoric fiction.
Yes.
Okay, got it. I'm looking forward to reading them. I've looked at the books, and I think I'm. You've caught my attention. Do you have any last comments, perhaps to others who might embark on such a journey of writing?
If you have an interest in writing, do it. And don't expect your first draft to be fantastic. But do it and have people read it and give you their assessment. And be willing to realize that when they do that, they're giving you their time. You have a product. They don't. They're spending their time polishing your product. So regardless of what they say, be grateful.
Okay. Thank you, Bonnie Matthews. Have a good day.